Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Tempi Sifakuda, political analyst at Africa Asia Dialogue. Good morning. Thanks for joining us again. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What is the latest that we are hearing coming out of the region?
Well, the situation is still the same, except that the negotiations are carrying on. There was a third meeting between the Ukrainians and the Russians. That negotiations, which are currently coordinated by the Belarusians, so that is continuing. And part of the discussions there, of course, they're all about the ceasefire so that they can allow safe passage for those Ukrainians who want to leave those areas that are currently heavily bombarded by Russians. So it's not a complete ceasefire, but it's just a ceasefire to allow safe passage for those who want to escape, and of course the transportation of medicine and all other things that are currently needed in those areas.
There was a couple of Twitter comments that I was reading last night saying, well, the passageways that the refugees were allowed to travel were mined. I looked. I could not find original sourcing for that. It seemed to me to be just fear-mongering. What do we really know in terms of the ability of refugees to leave the country?
Well, one of the points that the Ukrainians raised was that the passage that has been provided so far, both passages were leading to Belarus and Russia. And that the Ukrainian was saying that's, quote, immoral, because that's not going to happen. They wanted people to at least go to other European countries, particularly Hungary, Poland, and those countries that have been receiving a lot of refugees from Ukraine. So the passage that have been guaranteed by the Russians at the moment all lead to Belarus and Russia, which is a problem for the Ukrainians.
Right, well, that makes sense. But it's still different to saying that the passages are mined and are going to kill everybody along the way.
Oh, yeah, sure. But, you know, the funniest thing is, notwithstanding what Russians have been saying in terms of why they went in the first place, to go and save the Russian-speaking people of Ukraine, if you look at the number of people that have escaped so far, yes, I mean, the bombardment has been taking place by and large in the western part of Ukraine. But one would have expected that the Russian-speaking or those that are politically aligned to Russia would have moved to Russia. But we see a very small number of people who have since escaped to Russia fleeing the war. Most people who have escaped Ukraine so far have gone to Western countries. So that's one point
it's a very, very interesting one. We had an analyst on yesterday who told us that South Africa did the right thing by abstaining because they're maintaining neutrality. I argued that in a case of human rights abuses and a breach of international law, to abstain is not to be neutral, but in fact it is to take sides. What is your thought on that?
Well, that's what Bishop Tutu said, isn't it? Just to paraphrase what he said. He said, those who abstain in times of injustice are side with the oppressor. And we see what's happening here. South Africa decided to abstain, notwithstanding that there are obvious violations of human rights and international law, and they decide to abstain. But importantly, I mean, they are siding with a very small group of individuals who are on the side of Russia, whilst the entire free world and the democratic world is taking a very clear position. I don't know what message are we trying to send here, because we're rapidly moving towards the side of those that are going to be on the wrong side of history, particularly in this regard. I mean, if you have countries like Kenya that have taken a very clear position on this particular issue, and we remain on the fence, it's quite embarrassing. And South Africa's argument, of course, is that they want to maintain a non-aligned position. But you can still do that by embracing a just cause, saying this is wrong. And having said that, we're saying it because of what has happened in the past elsewhere. But I think what's very important is that South African foreign policy is a bit confused. And I don't want to accuse Nalini Pandor of other things, but I think we take our cue from other parts of the world. I mean, we're still sulking for certain decisions that have been made by certain countries when it comes to other wars and other battles. And I understand why, because South Africa feels that the world has got double standards when it comes to such issues, and they should have taken similar issue when it comes to other conflicts around the world. My argument, or counter argument, is that yes, I do accept and agree that there's double standards in the world, but we can use this opportunity to say we are with justice, and as a result, we raise the issue like the Nelson Mandela Foundation did over the weekend, even though I felt their statement was just too much messaging. But at least they did say, okay, we condemn this. But having said that, let us remind the world that we must not take double standards. Racism is still a big issue, and how black people are treated in Ukraine, etc. So you take a position, and at the same time, you highlight the shortcomings of the past. But I think what South Africa has done is there's an element of sulking in their position to say, okay, we'll show you as well that we can do it, because you did not support us in certain position, as a result, we're also going to be taking a different position in this regard. And I think we missed the point by not taking a clear position.
Although, I mean, that said, you know, South Africa accusing people around the world, other countries, of double standards, they are the masters in double standard, aren't they? They will support Cuba's human rights abuses, clearly supporting Russia, not unafraid to embrace Iran, Omar al-Bashir being allowed a free passage in and out of the country, but horribly silent when it came to Zimbabwe and the suffering of fellow Africans on the continent, as well as many other issues. So very, very quick to criticize some nations, but very, very supportive of some of the very, very dubious ones.
Oh, yes. And this decision is going to come back to haunt our reputation as South Africa, because we seek to be wanting to entrench ourselves with the oppressors. And I think President Cyril Ramaphosa is caught in between here, because I think we've seen over the past couple of years that his politics are more aligned with the West. But I think there's pressure from the ANC and from DERCO that pushes him towards the other side of political alliance. So he is torn, as far as I can see. I don't think he's quite is comfortable with the position that has taken, but he faces pressure within the ANC proper. Must remember, Cyril Ramaphosa was not in exile, and the majority of the ANC were trained in Russia, and they still have very close relationships with Russia. We know that Jacob Zuma and his cronies were very close to the Russians. So Cyril Ramaphosa, being someone who was neither arrested nor exiled, finds himself to an extent isolated by those within the ANC who still believe that Russia is their ally, and as a result they must support Russia whatever it takes. So, and you have seen, by the way, before the statement was issued, when he was asked impromptu in Pretoria, in one of the meetings that he attended in Pretoria, he was quite willing to say, you know, almost saying we condemn what has happened, but I think he understood that if he took a position, a clear position, siding with the Western world and democratic world in this regard, he might just receive a backlash, as we see happening at the moment. We see that there's a force, both from DERCO and from the ANC, who are pushing the Russian side in this regard. And Cyril Ramaphosa has got no choice but to align himself with the majority within his party and government.
What's interesting as well, a number of points worth noting, I think, is the fact that we are still talking about people being trained in Russia. 30 years since we became a democracy speaks to an appalling problem of ANC succession, because if your members and if those with all the power have been in this position for 30 years since we became a democratic country, and were trained in Russia before that, and that's part of the loyalty that they have, it speaks to another fundamental concern within the ANC itself, which is the fact that it's a very, very dated and old movement.
No, indeed. But also, you know, there's always a problem within the leftist politics of trying to hide and and overlook the mistakes of those that used to support left politics around the world, including Cuba, for example. I mean, we know that Cubans were oppressed to a large extent by Fidel Castro, but none from the left used to condemn Cuba for those violations. People are not allowed to leave their countries. There were basic suppression of freedoms. So there's that very strong alliance and affiliation within the leftist movements of not condemning nor criticizing those that supported their struggles in the past. And we see exactly that happening again this time around with Vladimir Putin, the ANC refusing to condemn what is done. But I take your point, this elongated hangover of the glorious past within the ANC is very, very problematic, that they continue associating themselves. Their politics have not evolved in any way or form in terms of embracing the worst. I mean, you still have very anti-Western sentiments within the ANC, notwithstanding that there are all those beautiful things that come from the West, including support of basic non-governmental organizations by Western organizations in this country, and all other projects that the Western countries continue to support. But the ANC insists on affiliation and alliance with Russia simply because of those past contributions that Russia had within the liberation movements of this country. That's, of course, remains very problematic. It was the same with Mugabe. Notwithstanding that Mugabe continued oppressing his people in Zimbabwe and was doing all these horrible things to his people, we somehow found a way of giving him an excuse, excusing him from all of his mishaps until his last days, actually.
Absolutely.
It remains very, very embarrassing. So hopefully things will change as the leadership of the ANC changes as well.
Thembisa Fikuda, political analyst at Africa Asia Dialogue. Thank you, as always, bringing us an update on the Russia-Ukraine war.